From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Mark Reed from Yale University is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about the first use of nanosensors for measuring cancer biomarkers in whole blood.
Dr. Mark Reed holds the Harold Hodgkinson Chair of Engineering and Applied Science at Yale University. He's also the Associate Director of the Yale Institute for Nanoscience and Quantum Engineering. His research activities have included the investigation of electronic transport in nanoscale and mesoscopic systems, artificially structured materials and devices, molecular scale electronic transport, plasmonic transport in nanostructures, and chemical and biological nanosensors. Dr. Reed, would you describe what you and your colleagues reported on in the December 13th issue of Nature Nanotechnology regarding the use of nanosensors?
The technique to be able to measure these biomarkers is a new technique that uses direct electrical detection with nano-sized transistors. The transistors, nanowires, nanosensors, made on a very small length scale, act as charge amplifiers. So when something you're looking for, an analyte, gets bound onto the sensor, it gives an electrical signal. Specifically, we used as a model system to cancer biomarkers, PSA, prostate-specific antigen, and CA15-3, which is the equivalent for breast cancer in women. And the novelty here is, for the first time, we were able to actually do this detection using whole blood.
Why did you employ a label-free biomarker detection technology?
Well, label-free is of interest to the biomedical community for two reasons. First is not the most compelling, which is time and cost. It takes time to label things. It's additionally expensive. It's a little more complex to be able to do that. But the most important thing is that in some cases, the labeling that you do onto the analyte that you're looking for causes a modification of the binding or the binding kinetics, so you don't get a good answer or, in some cases, a distorted answer of what you're looking for. The label-free approach doesn't have any of those issues, and as long as you're able to do the specific binding that looks for that analyte, like I mentioned before, it sticks onto the sensor and gives an electrical signal, then it's the true binding of that molecule that you're looking for.
As you mentioned, this is the first time this type of work was done in whole blood, which as you know, can be a pretty complex environment. How were you able to overcome the challenge of whole blood detection?
Well, the whole blood detection was the key. The people have been exploring the use of these nanosensors for quite a while, on the order of 10 years or so. But the problem was they had to use very specially prepared laboratory solutions to be able to do this. And the reason that something like whole blood or plasma is a problem is that this detection mechanism to be able to amplify the charge that gets bound onto the surface is a fundamental limitation in high salt concentration solutions like blood. And so the previous techniques were done in tremendously desalted and low ion concentration solutions. So understanding this limitation was going to just totally hamper the field, we came up with a bunch of different ideas, a lot of which we threw away onto how we can get around this limitation. And we zeroed in onto kind of an elegant capture and release purification method. And how this works is that one part of the chip, and for our demonstration we use two chips, but these can be very transparently integrated onto the same chip. The blood is exposed to this first chip, which then pulls out from the blood solution the type of analyte that you're trying to look for. And then you're able to wash that away and get rid of all the nasty things in blood that would affect the measurement and go to the kind of solution that you want. This is these analytes that are bound onto the first chip are then released in, and there's a bunch of ways that you can do that. We specifically used a photo release method. And then once these are released, they get directed into the second part of the chip, which is the detection system. And now they're able to detect it. You don't have the problem of high ion concentration. And, in fact, we get down to well below clinically relevant levels for the type of proteins that we were looking for.
Now, in addition to measuring cancer biomarkers in whole blood, what other advantages does your new method have over previous biomarker detection techniques?
Well, the common approach that people use is something called a sandwich ELISA, ELISA standing for enzyme-linked immunoassay. And in a way, our system is very much like that with the end system. This capture and then capturing again is kind of the hallmark in ELISA, but we do it in a chip-based method. However, the electronic approach and the chip-based approach is got some tremendous advantages over the standard ELISA process. First of all, it's not long at all. Typical ELISAs take a long time. We're able to get data literally within seconds and good calibrated measurements within minutes. We see in real time the signal that we get out of these. More importantly is that we can do massive multiplexing of this, and this is one of the future goals that we're going to do. At the moment, we just did these two as a model system, and we have plans to be able to move this to as many as you want. So the massive multiplexing for different proteins or even for the same protein to get very accurate measurements, high signal to noise, is really one of the keys here. In microelectronics, the reason we're able to do such complicated computing systems is because we put millions and millions of transistors. They're actually very dumb little things, but we put them together to be able to create a complex computation. In the same way, we can have hundreds, thousands, maybe even up to millions, different detectors that can work in parallel manner to be able to give complicated signals. Finally, this uses a very small sample size, and recent work we did compared the typical type of sample that you need for an ELISA for this kind of technique, and you're at sample sizes a factor of 100, 10,000 less than what you need. So because of that, instead of having to withdraw a blood sample in a sub-milliliter venous puncture, we can do it with a small pinprick.
Now, I'm sure the next questions are what a lot of people are really interested in. How would doctors use these novel nanosensor devices, and how might their use change the way testing is now done?
Well, one of the main motivations was just to try to overcome this basic problem, and so we weren't thinking too much about the applications. But now that we've done that, then what could this potentially do? First of all, it doesn't take any of the complexity of ELISAs or other things. This can be done. The chip itself is, of course, just sense and volume, and the entire packaging could look very much like the common glucose meter that you can buy in the store today. So something portable, handheld. Again, something like a pinprick instead of a large to have to go into a clinic and be able to withdraw blood. And in fact, we're working on ideas that would be even less than a pinprick to potentially make it much easier for this. So you can do this, hopefully, when this all becomes commercialized, into something that's tremendously less expensive than present systems. It can be done remotely. It can be done by patients themselves. The important point is that we prototype this using two different types of these cancer biomarkers because they're of interest. But we can generalize this to pretty much any kind of thing, any kind of protein that you're looking at or other types of biomarkers. So as the medical community evolves new types of markers that they're looking for, this technology can very agilely and quickly move to looking at those.
Now, you mentioned multiplexing before. What are some other steps your team has planned that you can talk about your team has in mind to move this research forward? And do you want to go out on a limb and say when might this become a commercial reality?
Well, we've actually already started a spinoff company on this called Altura Diagnostics to look at the commercialization aspects of it. So I don't know when, but quickly, within years, I think we could get something into the markets. There's a lot of engineering challenges to transition from these simple laboratory tests into something that's clinical, robust, and not even, you know, for trials, something that can be used in a laboratory setting. There is integrating all the electronics and the multiplexing capability, multiplexing both electrically and biochemically. We are in the process of doing some of those tests to see, indeed, that we can do multiple multiplex tests together that don't interfere with each other. We're looking at other model systems, biomarkers to be able to look at, and working with experts to find what the best biomarkers and the some of the first potential uses that we can do on this. So unlike many of the things that scientists work in the lab where their science results takes a long time to transition into something that's useful, we see this as being pretty short. We can go from the types the status of where we are right now with the research into the change in the actual approach and how we do it is not going to change when we actually move that into a product. So it could happen very, very quickly.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.